Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. What is your idea of the ideal body? Mine has always been the mythic physique depicted in the sword and sandal films that were popular during my childhood. This heroic template was in turn inspired by the Greco-Roman statuary that depicted my Olympian ancestors. Both cinema and sculpture celebrated the mighty ones of old, the doers of great deeds. I'm currently in my 60s and no longer as likely to tackle the heavy poundages as I once did in my youth. However, I'm determined to embody and express my ideal physique to the best of my ability for the remainder of my years. I've recently declared a quest for optimal wellness. You're invited to accompany me on this quest and to share the details of your own journey on our podcasts or in our online groups. Tonight, I'm very honored to have with me Ryan Foley and his show, The Phoenix Protocols, and Ryan is going to generously share what he's been finding on his journey. Thank you very much, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm really looking forward to today's show. I read through the material you sent me, and it's very exciting. You simplified everything, made it crystal clear, and then had some very common sense suggestions, which now I'm going to integrate at some point in the very near future.
Good, good. Well, so there were two different aspects that I wanted to talk about tonight. One is the 1,000 rep challenge, and then the other is my triumvirate for motivation. So which would you rather start with?
Anywhere you'd like to start, I'm game.
Okay. So one of the things that I've always been fascinated by is the science of bodybuilding. And I do think that that's something that is not really given the credit that it's due. I think those that are on the outside, they often look at lifting weights and being in the gym and bodybuilding as they're not really known for being scholarly pursuits. So I think a lot of people just equate them as, you know, big dumb jocks who just lift up heavy weights and set it back down again. Actually, a lot more to it. There is a very legit science to this exercise that we'd like to take part in. And so there is a large number of scientific data that's coming out that is advising not just men, but women as well, to take up what they call resistance training. Resistance training is just a funny buzzword for lifting weights. So anything right. that you're doing, but that can be, you know, anywhere from dumbbell curls to, you know, to barbell lifts to even working out with bands and things like that. So that way it's anything that's going through and putting those muscles under strain. And that's not to discount the certain things that they do with like CrossFit, excuse me, with CrossFit and bodyweight exercises. But I just think because I've seen there's a difference in people whenever they come into the gym. And if you've been, once you're in a gym long enough, you can kind of start to look around and you start to notice that there are certain trends, there are certain people. And so I see a lot of gym goers, particularly female, who mainly just work out with the cardio machines. They get on the treadmill or they get on the Stairmaster and they're using those. And then that's it. They pack it up and they go home. And the largest reason that they have found is that the women are afraid to go through and pick up weights because they're afraid that they're going to get big and bulky. It's one of the one stigmas that we have to kind of abolish that belief. And so I would often tell people that, you know, I've been doing this for several years trying to get, you know, big and bulky. And it's kind of one of those things, just because you pick up a dumbbell doesn't mean you're suddenly, you know, start to look like She-Hulk when you're running around. So that's a very specific set of exercises that you have to do along with a diet regimen, things like that. So it's not going to happen overnight. But yet the scientific data is starting to come out, and they're showing that when they go through and they work out with resistance training, with lifting weights, then that's where they're seeing the fastest amount of return. So that's where I always encourage people to go through and lift these weights. And one of the biggest questions that I often get asked is, well, you know, how many reps should I do? And so this where it comes back to, what are your goals? Those are always the first question that I always want to go through and ask someone, because whatever their goals are is going to dictate the type of lifting that you're supposed to do. So in going through and doing my experiments, much like yourself, the way that you are inspired by the ancient statuaries and things like that, I'm inspired by the comic book heroes. I know that's not exactly an ideal, body structure to strive for because they're drawings as opposed to, you know, being in real life. But with what we're seeing with the Marvel Cinematic Universe and those heroes and my inspiration, people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, John Cena, The Rock, so I would start to look around and see, okay, well, so what were some of these training regimens that that these individuals were doing? And so one of the ones that caught my eye was Hugh Jackman. And so the way that he transformed himself, if you go through and you do just a quick Google search and you see how he looked whenever he was first cast as Wolverine, all the way up to, you know, his progression, the way that he did throughout his run with that character, he developed a massive amount of muscle, but he was also very lean. His veins were very pronounced. And so one of the things that I found in one of his workouts is that he accomplished a goal that was technically, he elevated into what was called the 1,000-pound club. So the 1,000-pound club is where you're lifting 1,000 pounds across three different exercises. And depending upon who you're talking with, you have to lift it for a minimum of 3 reps for each exercise. So the big three that are always brought up are the deadlift, the squat, and the bench press. So it's you're going through and you're taking those totals and you're trying to get to 1,000 pounds lifted across those three exercises. And as I was going through there for a little while, I was trying to reach that goal. But then I found that it was counter to what the aesthetic that I was trying to cultivate. And so in order to go through and lift those weights and get to that big, heavy amount, you have to go through and you have to develop something that's known, and I'm probably going to butcher this because I know how to read it, but I don't know how to say it. But so it's myofibrillar hypertrophy, which is so basically what that is. So the myofibrillar is where you're trying to make your muscles as dense as possible. And generally speaking, the denser the muscle, the stronger it is. So therefore in order to achieve that, what you're doing is you're trying to build pure strength. And if you're going to do that, then you're going to keep your rep counts very, very low, where you're going to be lifting anywhere up to 85% or higher of your maximum, of your one rep max for every lift that you're doing. So you're only doing sets that are, you know, 3 reps, maybe, or 5 reps at the most. Because what you're trying to do is you're trying to build that pure strength. So if we think about these, you know, like the powerlifting that we see in the Olympics, they are much less concerned with their aesthetics and how they look physically as opposed to how much weight they can lift. So that's why you're going to see some of these guys, they may not look like they're in a tremendous amount of shape. There's an absolutely hilarious a video on YouTube where Patton Oswalt talked about where he saw this guy on the street not realizing because he just looked like a short, wide, you know, round man. But what he didn't realize is that he was a power lifter. And so whenever you go through and you're that power lifter, yeah, you get that. You can look like this round individual. So they think, oh, well, he might even be, you know, out of shape. No, he's just actually tremendously strong. So it can be somewhat deceiving how strong these power lifters really are. So one of the things that – so the opposite of this is developing what's called sarcoplasmic hypertrophy, which is a fancy way of saying what you're trying to do is you're trying to get as much blood flowing into those muscles as possible so that way they get big. But just because they're big doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be incredibly strong. And so as a result, you're going to have two individuals who may not have the same, you know, strength to weight ratio because what they're doing is they're building for a certain aesthetic. And so this is where you'll see a lot of these. And so in order to achieve that, the rep ranges, they're floating around 8 to 12 reps. And so generally speaking, the way it works, so you go through and you start doing this biological math. And so what I've discovered is that if you're lifting one-handed, So if, imagine if you're doing like a dumbbell rep, for every time that you increase the weight by 5 pounds, you're going to lose 4 reps. And it works the other way, too. If you decrease the weight by 5 pounds, you're going to gain 4 reps. And so if you're doing a two-handed exercise, something like a bench press, you know, or something like an overhead press, then it goes up by factors of 10. So if you increase it by 10 pounds, you're going to lose four reps.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're trying to do, you're trying to keep your rep range somewhere between 8 and 12. And so in order to achieve, but then what you're trying to get to is muscle failure. And you want your muscle failure, so if your goal is 12, you want your muscle failure to happen at 13. So I always tell people, you know, so depending on what your rep range is, you're going for failure minus 1. So let's just pretend that we're doing dumbbell curls, okay? And so you've got the 20-pound dumbbells, and you're able to achieve 12 reps. Once you can get to those full 12 reps, then it's time to increase the weight by 5 pounds. And by doing that, you're going to find yourself reduced down to where you can only do 8 reps. And so then it's time to start working your way back up the chain until you get to 12 again. And then once you can get to 12, and this may take a few weeks, you know, for you to get to the next level. But then once you do, then you just shift it back again. So now you go through, you add 5 more pounds, then you're only going to be able to do 8. And so you continue to go through and try to get as strong as you can by using this method of this sarcoplasmic hypertrophy. And by going through and do that, what you're going to do is you're going to get big, but you may not necessarily get, you know, tremendously stronger. You may find that if you're really wanting to push that weight to that higher level, then you go through and that's when you're going to ratchet back the number of reps that you're doing, and that's going to get you to build up that strength. But what my goal has been, because, and I've been doing that sarcoplasmic hypertrophy for several years, and I'm pretty happy with where I'm at right now as far as my actual, you know, muscle size. So now what I'm attempting to do is I'm attempting to get leaner so that way but yet while still preserving my muscle mass. So I want to go through and do that. So in order to do that, what I'm doing is I'm increasing the reps to where I'm averaging somewhere between around 16 to 20 reps per set. And so by going through and doing that, my muscles they're under tension longer. And so, but in order to do that, I have to reduce the amount of weight. So I'm reducing the weight, but yet I'm increasing the number of reps that I'm doing. And so as a result, you know, those muscles, they're under tension longer, they're burning more. And then whenever I go through, we've talked about this in the past, where I enjoy antagonistic sets, which is where you try to find a counter. So for every push that you do, you're trying to do a pull. And so by going through and doing that, so let's say, for instance, the classic is the bench press, and then you pair that with a seated cable row. And so by doing that, so I move immediately from the bench press, move over to the seated cable row, and I'm allowing my chest to rest and recover while I continue to work out by using my back. So that way I'm constantly – now my heart doesn't care what exercise I'm doing. It just recognizes it as exercise. And so as a result, it's speeding to get those, you know, that blood flowing into my system. So I'm keeping my heart rate elevated. And as long as I can keep my heart rate over a certain level, the lifting of the weights actually turns into an aerobic exercise. But the only way that this works is if you go through and you're constantly moving. So that's the thing. I'm the great white shark when I'm at the gym. I never stop. You know, I'm constantly in motion. And even when I get done, I may set the weights down and then I don't just sit there. I'm walking back and forth in the gym trying to keep my heart rate up. Whereas when you're trying to get stronger, it's a much different lifting strategy because you're going through and you're lifting that 85% or more of your one rep max. You get your 3 reps, you rack the weights, and then you're going to sit there and you're going to take, you know, a good 5 minutes if you have to off. So that way you can get all that lactic acid, which is what causes fatigue. You're trying to get that lactic acid to dump out of your muscles. So that way when you get back under the weights again, you're generating as much strength as you can. So it all comes down to this style of what you're wanting to look like. And you can go through, you can do, you know, Google image searches, and you can see the difference between, you know, a power lifter, a bodybuilder, a CrossFitter, you know, a cross country trainer, you know, people that do body weight exercises. And I just, for me personally, for my personal aesthetic, I think that bodybuilding body style is the most aesthetically pleasing. So that's what I'm trying to do. And so that's where you have to kind of consider that you have a layer of fat, which is in between your skin and your muscles. And so the muscles are there, you've built those up, and then, you know, you can't get rid of your skin, but you know, so you have this sweater that's in between your muscles and your skin. And the thinner that you can make that sweater, the more pronounced the muscles will become. And so that's what's affectionately referred to as cut. You know, so if you can go through and you can get that cut look, then to me that is much more aesthetically pleasing. But I am 46. I do work at a 9-to-5 job, and where I'm sitting, you know, behind a desk all day working at a computer, and then I do my writing. So it is an uphill climb for me, but it is something that it's, for me, it's as much the journey as it is, you know, the end result. And so by going through and deciding what I want, you know, to develop. And so that's what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get cut. And so as much as I'm inspired by the comic book heroes and the people of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the other body type that I'm extremely drawn to are those of professional wrestlers. And so the professional wrestlers, these guys are tremendous athletes, and I'm not discounting their strength in the least bit. These guys are, you know, they're world-class athletes. They're absolutely fantastic. But at the same time, it's much the same way with, like, Chris Hemsworth doesn't have to lift 1,000 pounds in order to be Thor. He just has to look like that he can lift 1,000 pounds. Now, this is to say that, so like when Henry Cavill decided to take on the role of the Witcher, I went through and studied his workouts as well. And so he had to develop his posterior chain, a lot of heavy leg work, a lot of work in his butt and in his back, because he was going through and he was doing these stunts and he was performing them himself. And so he has to go through and swing the sword. But he has to swing it with, you know, precision, you know, time after time. And so he needs to be strong enough and he needs to have the endurance enough to be able to do that take after take after take. So they do develop a natural amount of strength, but it's also that physical appearance. So with the wrestlers are kind of the same way. They are extremely strong. I'm not taking anything away from any of those guys, but they're also looking for a certain aesthetic so that way they can look good on camera. That's really the goal. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to look good on camera. So it was a trio of professional wrestlers that brought me this idea where they were going through and they set up what they called the 500 rep challenge. So with so much of my stuff, and I think this is probably the same for just about everybody, you go through and you see what other people are doing.
Yes.
You find that to be inspiring. So this guy's doing this. This guy's doing that. So I've studied those workouts of Henry Cavill and Jason Momoa. Jason Momoa, his stuff was a beast. That man might not be human. But then you also have, you know, Chris Evans and, you know, even the stuff that they did for people like Kumail Nanjiani and for Paul Rudd. So they're going through and they're developing all this stuff. So what they had developed was this 500-pound challenge or 500-rep challenge, which is essentially the same idea that I'm bringing to the people here that we'll post up, you know, after the interview's over. But for me, it's a 1,000-rep challenge, and I'm by no means out here saying, oh, look at me, I'm twice as strong as a wrestler. That's not what I'm doing at all, because when we go through and we combine that with the – we're combining it with those antagonistic sets. So that's what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get that back and forth while going through and lifting a tremendous amount. But so that way I can keep my heart rate elevated. Hopefully I can go through and burn fat, hopefully, because that's the ultimate goal. And so by going through and doing this, I'm constantly trying to keep myself active so that way I can achieve that aesthetic look that I'm trying to go for.
Wow, you thought everything out. It's all very logical, all very simple. And that's
one of the things that I try to do is that this is not, because basically what you're doing is you're picking a series of exercises, ones that you're tremendously comfortable with, but then you're pushing yourself beyond your barriers that you probably weren't used to before. So if you've never done, you know, a certain complicated maneuver, this is not the time to go through and attempt to do that for reps of 50. But if you've gone through and you've done, you know, bench press after bench press, this is a good time to go through and test your limits to see what you're really capable of. And so by going through and doing this, what I've discovered is that it's a lot of mental work because you're doing a much lighter weight, you're going to go through and you're going to be allowed to focus on your form. And form is more important, I think, than the amount of weight that you're lifting. If you can go through and perform that surgical form, I think you're doing better for yourself because you're going to get more out of those lifts. You're going to get more out of those workouts. I know that there are a lot of people out there who do enjoy lifting heavy, and I do see the benefits of it. I really do. There are times where I do like to lift heavy myself. But every time I've ever incurred an injury, it's because of I've gone through and I've lifted, you know, too much weight. My ego got a little too big, and I said, well, let's give it a shot, and then I ended up paying for it. So by going through and designing this in this way, what you're doing is you're trying to mentally push past the idea of doing 50 reps, you know, per set, which is, I mean, it's an astounding amount of weight or astounding number of reps that you have to push yourself through. And so this is where I would recommend this is not something that you're going to go through and do every single day. If you can do a 1,000 rep challenge every day when you're working out, you don't need my help. You've got it figured out. But so this is something that I tend to throw into my regular exercises. I try to do it on the weekend, so that way I've got enough time to recover and I've got plenty of time there at the gym in order to get it done. But I figured out that, I mean, with the amount of time that it takes to go through and do the sets, if you're not resting, if your setups are quick, things like that, you can do this in about 45 minutes. It is possible if you're going through. So I'm not spending, you know, 2 hours at the gym in order to get this done. You get in, get your lifts done, and then get out.
That's doable, though, because as you were describing everything, I'm currently doing that step-up system that you described, but I modified it so I don't just stop at 5 reps. I increased the number of reps I'm doing every week, and I'm starting off with 5-pound D weights, and I'm going all the way up to, with some exercise, 25, with some 30, with some 35, you know, depending on what body part they are. And so I'm doing eight repetitions, and that in each of the steps for each weight that I'm using.
Okay,
so
I'm with you.
That adds up. So later on I'll do the math, but I'm probably doing like 600-700 reps during a workout in total. So my goal for that was to reach 12 reps with everything on the pyramid going up and down. So once I'm done with that, I'm going to adapt this 1,000 rep challenge. But in the interim, I'm going to count exactly how many reps I do and just get used to doing like 500 to 1,000 reps per day.
And it is, I think whenever people first start getting involved with weightlifting and they start to cross that threshold where, we've weeded out the novices, and, you know, there are some people that are going to get in and they're going to try it and they'll fall by the wayside. But then you're going to get into that nice, meaty area where, okay, this is something that I see myself doing on a regular basis. And that's when a lot of people go through and they start their tracking. And I did the exact same thing. I went through and I tracked, and because I had my exercises predetermined, yeah, and I had them printed out on a sheet. And then I'd go through and I would chart, you know, how much weight I did. You know, I would chart how many, you know, reps I was able to do, things like that,
mm-hmm.
just so that way I could go through and chart my progress and see how well I was doing. And so I think after a while, it got to a point where it was kind of the same thing that we have discussed in the past about using, you know, the apps that they have to go through and track, you know, what you're eating and things like that. But I eat the same thing just about every day. So I was just logging the same thing day after day after day. And that's where it kind of came with me was I was going through and I was just pretty much tracking the same thing over and over again. And that's where I kind of – so I phased out of that. And that's where I found that that was a little bit of a mistake because going through and writing it all down is going to go through and help you with your accountability. And so I think that's probably something that I need to get back into is going through, even if it's just charting my progress on my phone or finding an app that I can do that with, just so that way I can stay mentally focused with it.
And it also helps you find, like for instance, with a diet. I was doing the keto diet most recently for a while. But then I started to develop like gastrointestinal and skin problems. I tried shifting like the foods that I was eating and researching what I was eating and what I was taking in terms of vitamins and protein and so forth. Nothing seemed to work. So then I just stopped that diet and figured, let me normalize my system first. So I'll just eat kind of like a Mediterranean type diet, but moving towards normalizing first. And then I'm diabetic type 2, so I know I need to reduce my sugar. So now my body is almost there in terms of normalization, and none of the problems I had before are still with me. So now it's like, all right, I have to address the sugar. Carbs, all the diets that I've been on agree that, you know, some carbs are better than other carbs, and there's general agreement there regardless of what diet you're looking at, which carbs are good and which carbs might not be so good. So that's going to stay constant. And then after I get the sugar amounts that I can use and not trigger my diabetes, I'm going to focus on what ratio of fat and protein does my body need to optimally reach my goals. So again, it's a process, and I was on the paleo diet, I was on the Atkins type diet, the Mediterranean diet, the keto, and all of them had pluses and all of them had minuses. So,
and the strange thing is that you and I could go through and we could eat the exact same thing and we're going to have different responses.
Yes.
To the different diets. And so that's where, and so that's where it comes back to the idea of elevating your gym IQ. And so it's, and that's what I hope that everyone comes away with whenever I come on here and talk, is that we've gone through and we've elevated your gym IQ just a little bit. So that way it's not enough for me to just come on and say, do this. And you say, why? Because I tell you to do it and it'll work. It's more along the lines of I want to be able to teach people so that way they can go through and adapt that information and then figure out what works for them so that way they can get their best results. And so that's where, so there are times where I can tell you to do stuff, but you may not respond the same way that my body has. And
right.
with all of this, everything that I'm doing, I'm not a doctor in the least bit. This was just something that, you know, I've put together myself. I've stood on the shoulders of other people to figure out what works best for me. And that's what I hope that other people are able to do on a long enough timeline so that way they can develop their own programs.
And that's the journey. And you're very honest, as are all the other people who do these Mythic Physique Quest for Optimal Wellness shows. Everybody sharing what they've learned, what they're learning, where they messed up royally, what they're trying out. And it's a journey. We could all learn from each other and help each other. Like, for instance, that pyramid thing that I've been doing now very satisfactorily, you suggested that on a show. So I did it as you described it. And then I found, hey, what if I do this? What if I do that? And then found another variant of it that right now is getting me excited and getting me feeling very pumped and even tired after my workouts. So I'll stick with that until, you know, I achieve my goal for that. And by then I'll probably be bored with it a little bit. And now you've given me a new toy to play with, and I'm sure it'll be the same thing there. It's a never-ending process, and things change. I know my dietary needs have changed. When I first was diagnosed with diabetes, I used to eat a lot of peanut butter, and I was able to digest
okay.
that a problem. And that's fine. You know, I could peanut butter was my, if I was hungry and there was nothing healthy I could eat other than peanut butter, then I didn't mind eating peanut butter. Until one day, peanut butter no longer worked. It triggered my blood sugar. And ever since then, and it's been years now, I could maybe once or twice a month have a tablespoon of peanut butter without setting anything off. But that's it. My staple food is no longer there. And the same thing has happened with other staple foods as well. So the diabetes keeps you on your toes, you know, because even if you find what works perfectly, you learn after a while that it's going to work perfectly until the day that it no longer works. So then you're going to have to go through this again.
As long as I don't lose chicken, I'll be okay, because I think chicken's just one of the staples in my diet.
And yeah.
So as long as that continues to work for me, I suspect it'd be okay. But so I understand that, you know, exactly what you're talking about. So you go through and you find a new program, you find something that excites you, and so you can't wait to go through and implement that, or you see
right.
someone describing an exercise, and so that goes through, that inspires you, that makes you want to get in the gym and try it, and then you're going to go through and you're going to teach your body something new, and so you have to do that hard work of, okay, this is what I want you to do. And then you slowly start to see your body start to understand what you're asking of it. And then that's when you start to see those gains improve. And so I think one of the things, so that's, so going through and finding that new exercise, excellent motivational tool. And so
right.
In going through and knowing that I was going to talk to you today, this is where I wanted to bring up what I call my triumvirate of motivation. And so this is something that has worked for me in the past. And so this is where we're going to diverge just a little bit from the nuts and bolts of going through and lifting weights. And instead, this is more of the mental approach to it. And I do feel that the mental approach to it is something that's very important. So there's three pieces of advice that this is kind of based around. And so the first one comes from Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I believe that Schwarzenegger is the greatest bodybuilder of all time. And
yes.
Schwarzenegger once said, you can have the best ship in the world, but if the captain doesn't know where to go, he's just going to drift around and he's going to get lost. So that motivation is extremely important. I also found a quote from astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson. And Tyson was talking about how it is the knowledge that he is going to die that creates the focus that he needs in order to be alive. It is that urgency of accomplishment. He said, the need to express love now, not later. If we live forever, why even get out of bed in the morning? Because we always have tomorrow. And that's not the type of life I want to lead. So I understand exactly what he's talking about. So immortality would be a horrible thing because you would lose all your motivation. And then third, writer-director Kevin Smith. He directed Clerks and Chasing Amy and a number of great movies. He's also a really important podcaster. And he's known for going on these legendary fasts where he'll go 48 or 72 hours without eating. And I don't see how he does it. But I'm also trying to go through and I'm trying to fuel my body in order to preserve my muscle mass.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, I'm constantly trying to take in protein. But what he said was, his quote was, food is still going to be there. And it clued my mind into his way of thinking. So everyone loves Pizza Hut. Man, Pizza Hut's great. But Pizza Hut, it's still going to be there. So if I don't get it on Friday, it'll still be there for me on Saturday. And so by going through and delaying that gratification, because you know that it's going to be there whenever you get done, is something that I think is a tremendous amount of motivation. So we'll keep those three things in mind. We have the Schwarzenegger quote about, you know, needing focus. You have Neil deGrasse Tyson's quote about immortality. And then Kevin Smith telling us that food's still going to be there. So the first leg of my triumvirate, the one of the three, is love. And so all this work that I'm doing, it stems for a love of myself. So I want to be in good physical shape so I can be healthy. I understand, you know, not everyone's trying to look like Chris Hemsworth. Not everyone's trying to look like The Rock. And maybe they're in the gym and they're just in there to maintain. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that mindset.
No.
I think this is where that self-love needs to be that primary motivation. You need to do it for you. And so it's okay to throw some motivation in there to keep you on track. I mean, I love my kids. I love them to death. And I want to be around to see their grandkids years from now. So that's the sprinkles on the cake of my motivation. I'm hoping that at some point there's a woman out there who will want to see me naked. And so there's some more, you know, there's some good motivation as well for me to go in and get my stuff done. But at the end of the day, that's the icing. And so you can have the icing, you can have the sprinkles, but the main part of that cake, that main building block, it has to come from a love for yourself. And whenever I first got started on this whole journey, I always told myself that I wanted to walk my little girl down the aisle on my original knees, you know, without wheezing. Yeah, I wanted to look sharp in my tuxedo. And you know, my daughter is 17, so I've got a few more years. You know, hopefully I've got a lot. But, so I've got some time. But it's always been in the back of my mind, you know, that so whenever I'm going through and I'm tired, and I say, well, let's just get one more rep because that's going to get me one step closer to where I want to be. So that way when the minister asks me, you know, who gives this woman, I don't want to be out of breath, you know, whenever I say I do. So to me, those are good motivations. It's going through, but so at the end of the day, it has to be for love. And so there's the love part of the triumvirate. So the second leg of it is going to be purpose. And so I think one of the contributing factors to depression in the era of COVID was that one day, at which we're still in, I know for some reason a lot of people think that this thing is over, and we've still got a lot of a ways to go.
Not over.
You know, we fully whooped this thing. But so in the era of COVID, now things are starting to open up now. We're kind of starting to get a little bit of a semblance of normalcy. But the problem was that before, we didn't know when this was going to end. There was no end in sight. And so one day just tended to blend into the next. And so this is where I bring in the Neil deGrasse Tyson quote. And so it's easy to lose your motivation when you're constantly having to ask your kids or your coworker, you know, what is today? Is it Thursday? I can't remember. So when all that's kind of blended in together, it's easy to go through and lose your faith. It's easy to go through and lose your focus because it's the same thing day after day after day. So for those of you who might be listening to me for the first time, I'm also while I have my 9-to-5 job that I work in my office, I'm also a comic book writer, and I'm starting to branch out into, fingers crossed, hopefully could be a potential career in screenwriting. And so in doing this, yeah, it's not something I'm ready to start, you know, shouting from the mountaintops yet, but I'm dipping my toe into that pool. And in order to do that, I put myself on some pretty strenuous deadlines to go through, and I was juggling three different projects at the same time, and I've been doing that for the last couple of weeks.
Oh, fantastic!
And, thank you. And it's been hard. You know, it's up early, it's going to bed late, it's squeezing in all the different times that I have. To try to stay focused. But then this is where I start to pull in the Kevin Smith quote about how it's still going to be there. Okay, so I'm not going to go through and play World of Warcraft. I don't have time. But you know what? It's still going to be there. And once I go through and I can get this hard work done, then I can go through and I can reward myself. So I know I've got rewards waiting for me, you know, whenever I get to the end. And so there are times where I start to feel that brain pudding starting, you know, to hit where I can't think anymore, you know, and that's where I know I have to shut it down. And working out is the exact same way. You have to know, okay, if I do one more push, I'm pushing myself too far beyond my limits. So instead, I need to go ahead and shut it down so that way I can come back and do it tomorrow. And so it's all about learning those levels and not pushing yourself, you know, too far in one direction or the other. And then it's finding that way to go through distract yourself for a little bit and then, you know, get back into the game. So, but what I've found, so we've talked about this in the past about how someone asked me one time, how long am I going to be, how long am I going to be on this journey? And I said, well, it's infinite. I'm going to do it for as long as I can, you know, so I can do it as long as I can. And I haven't been, I don't have one of those driving factors like, okay, I have to be on a movie set in 12 weeks. Yeah, so like you see, like when Josh Brolin was brought in to play Cable in the Deadpool movie, they started training and they said, we've got 12 weeks to get you into shape so you can shoot that film. So they have these goals, they have these dates. And so I know, okay, I've got to start this on this time. So that gives them focus. That gives them purpose. And so I'm not entirely certain how it works out there in New Jersey, but like, so here in Oklahoma, man, this is the big leagues when it comes to weathermen, meteorologists. You know, this isn't like out in San Diego, where, you know, they go, what's the weather like, Chip? It's nice. Back to you, Stone. You know, it's that's the extent of the weather out there in San Diego. In Oklahoma, this is real deal because we're in the middle of Tornado Alley. And so I hear story after story where these weathermen, they retire, right, and they're dead in 6 months. And so it's kind of one of those things where I don't know if it's because they had health issues and that's why they retired, or they retired, they didn't have anything to do. And so as a result, they were looking around and just, well, I guess I'm done. And that's it. They shuffle off the mortal coil because they don't have anything else to do because that's they've been true. Used to chasing these tornadoes. So, I mean, I don't know. I can't guarantee that. But, I mean, it happens a lot here in Oklahoma. So it kind of makes you wonder. It's like, man, if you don't have a reason to get up in the morning, if every day is just the same as the next, that's where I think you go through and you lose your drive. And so that's where I think you can go through and you have to have that purpose. Use that Kevin Smith mentality of, you know, I'm going to do this diet, but instead of it being for until I can get to this goal weight, why don't I do this diet for a certain amount of days? So that way I know, hey, you know, I can make it to Saturday. Saturday is just 3 days away. And right. I think if people went through and they did that, I think they'd end up with having, you know, a little bit, they would find more purpose in their lives. And so that's, I think that's the second leg of the two. So you have the love and you have the purpose. So the third part of this, and this is the tough part. And I may need you to analyze this and let me know if I'm completely in left field with this thing. I don't think that I am. But so, and this brings us to anger.
Okay.
So I know anger is a bad thing. I know it. And when we shouldn't harbor hate in our hearts. And I'm full-throated agree with that. But, you know, even the Dalai Lama is going to get angry from time to time. We all feel it. And we would be inhuman not to. So instead, what I'm suggesting is that we find a way to weaponize that anger. So recently I had someone very, very close to me go through a really bad breakup that included a betrayal. And so I had to watch this person that I love very, very much pick themselves up off the mat. And they've done so. And so as a result, you know, he's back in the gym. He's lost 20 pounds. He's working on improving himself. He's doing all these things, but he had to go through and he had to have his heart broken in order to find the motivation that he needed to go through and make those improvements. And so it brought me back to this really funny, it was a comedy thing on YouTube about how to lose weight in 4 easy steps. I'll go through, I'll find the link and I'll post it after we get done.
Thank you.
Here. It's probably not safe for work, but it's funny, but it's also, it's a nice little piece where you can go through and it's 4 steps to help you lose weight. But so it goes back to my theory that we have to go through pain to be better people. And so I'm a child of the 80s, and G.I. Joe was my thing, you know, whenever I was a kid. Yeah, and so out of all the Joes, Snake Eyes was my favorite. So he's my favorite character. And whenever you used to buy the action figures, they would come with these little cards on the back that would, you know, describe, like, what their name and their rank was and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And it had little little flavor text to give you an idea of who these characters were. And so Snake Eyes, on his card, it said that Snake Eyes was tempered on the anvil of life until he was as dangerous as a razor-sharp sword flailing in the dark. And the G.I. Joes sheathed that sword and harnessed its energy, but never forgot that even in the sheath, the sword retains its cutting edge. And so that really got me thinking about, so look, I'm the farthest thing from a warrior, but I understand this sentiment. And so you have to find a way to sheath, you have to find a way to sheath that sword, and you have to find a way to harness its energy. And so to me, it's going through and taking that anger and turning it into something very positive. So we're friends. Everyone listen to this. I'm your friend, too. I consider all y'all a friend. I'm not going to lie. I've been depressed lately.
I'm sorry.
And I've been really lonely, you know. Lonely is pretty tough, you know, because, I mean, think about it. They go through and they take they put you in a prison with the worst people in the world, murderers, thieves, rapists. And the greatest punishment they can do is to take you away from those people and lock you in a hole. You know, so that doesn't make sense. It's like, man, you would think, yeah, get me away from these people. But no, so that isolation is a terrible thing. So during this time where I've gone through and I've been struggling with this, at the same time, those feelings, those are my razor sharp. That's my razor sharp sword that's flashing in the dark. And so for me, the gym, that's my scabbard. Cause so I go to the gym and I vent my frustration and my anger. And I do that by getting another rep. You know, it's so I actively choose not to do drugs. I don't drink the pain away. I've got a few of my friends and I know that's their weakness. And I've seen what it's done to people. But that's never been my thing. So no drugs, no drinking, you know, and there are times where it's a difficult thing to drag yourself to the gym when you're depressed. And I do get that.
Yes.
And then you go on this vicious cycle where you miss a day. And so that compounds your depression because it's this odd perpetuating cycle. Well, I didn't go to the gym because I'm depressed. Well, now I'm depressed because I didn't go to the gym. And so you've got to find a way to break that cycle. Even if it means just, yeah, to just go up there and just try to do something, do anything, because anything's better than nothing. And then you may end up finding, you know, you may end up finding that motivation that you need just by being there. And you go, okay, well, you know, I'll do a few more sets and then I'll shut it down. So at the end of the day, so the problem is that I'm a single guy. And so whether I want to be or not, I'm in competition with other single guys. And so, and we've talked in the past, and I do think it's true, comparison is the thief of joy. I do believe that.
Very true.
But, and so there are others out there who have genetic gifts that I don't have. You know, you can throw a rock and hit 12 people with bigger salaries than I have. So the women aren't beating down the door for my salary and the vast Foley fortune. You know, and but that's okay. So, but that doesn't mean I'm not without my accolades. You know, it's I've never hit a woman. I've never touched a kid. Again, I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. I don't gamble. I don't womanize. You know, and yet I'm still single, and that fact angers me. So rather than devolve down into destructive behavior, I use that as fuel to get one more rep. And so when I do that, I'm comparing myself with quote unquote him. Now he's not a real person. And this, but what I tell myself is that he's sitting on the couch You know, he's watching NASCAR saying, hey, babe, get me a beer. That's, I don't mean to impugn NASCAR fans, but that's just, you know, my apologies to them if they're out there. But so it's just not my thing. But so my goal is to be better than him. So okay. I'm putting in work now because, I mean, you know, you got to build the ark before the rain. And
right.
So I'm going through it. I'm trying to make myself as good as possible so that when she does walk through the door, I'm ready to go and I'm at, you know, 100 miles an hour. And so by doing that, so there's my anger factor. So I know it's an odd dichotomy to compare that anger with love and then also throw in the purpose. But I think by doing that, you find yourself able to dig down into wells of energy and reserve that you didn't know that you had, because you're going through with that purpose and you're going through, you're trying to be better than the next guy. And at the same time, you're doing it out of love. And so if you go through it and maybe, you know, the purpose part is kind of starting to fall off a little bit. Okay, well, let me pull from the other two. And hopefully I'll get to that point where that anger, I don't have to dip into that anymore for my motivation. And I can just pull from the other two. You know, it's but I think by going through and blending all these things together, you find a way to master your own form of motivation. And I think if you can do that, that's where you're able to get that one more rep that you didn't think you had in.
I could understand what you're saying, and I used a version of that in my journey. Now I'm getting I'm in my 60s, so my what fuels my journey has changed. But for a lot of my life, I followed something called the Olympian heroic path, and basically that was. It's not difficult to describe, but it's basically mythologizing your life, so that the monsters that you're facing. I could send you a video where somebody did an introduction for my show where they incorporated that element. You know, that explains it much better than I can at this particular point in time. But you're the warrior, and your life is your journey, and there are obstacles and there are challenges, and these things are mythologized and dealt with on a mythological level. And anger is one of the tools that you can bring into it because you're a warrior. And like last time we discussed areti, which is usually translated virtue, but it actually means personal excellence, the Greek word thymos, which is usually translated anger, actually means spiritedness, and it's a type of energy that you tap into. So a stallion has that spiritedness, you know. So anger is not a bad thing. And in Greek mythology too, Ares and Aphrodite were linked up in mythology. So many other myths throughout the world, the goddess of love is also the goddess of war. And Freya is one example. So these are energies, and they're life energies, and you can use them in any way that works as long as it's not a destructive force in your life. And one of the things I learned by following the heroic path and studying mythology is that the myths aren't there to tell you how to live. They're there to show you what happens if you do particular things or you are a certain way.
Right, right.
So the heroic path that you're describing with the anger and using the anger to motivate you and fuel you, and again, you're mythologizing, you have that imaginary person on the couch asking you for another beer. So that's pretty much Olympian heroic path in its essence. And so I understand what you're saying, and I've used anger in the past to motivate me and to fuel my workouts or whatever else I was doing, whether it was writing or developing a program or, you know, whatever I happened to be doing at the time. So I understand what you're saying.
And I think because I always tend to take it back to pop culture. So the two examples that were given is Darth Vader and the Hulk. Darth Vader and the Hulk are both, they're allegories for rage. They're allegories for anger and the danger that comes from harboring that. But then at the same time, I also enjoy watching on HBO right before the NFL season starts. They air Hard Knocks, where they do an inside look at training camps for various teams. And they did one with the Houston Texans. And so heavily featured in that was their defensive end, J.J. Watt, who is an absolute animal on the field. And, you would see him, training, and then everyone else would go home, and he was still out there training because the last thing he wanted to be was outworked by someone else. So he would go through and he would put those hours in. And I think you only get to that level through anger. And so I think that's he remembers those losses. He remembers those times where he was beaten. And as a result, he's like, that's not going to happen to me again.
Right.
So to me, that's a good example of using that focus, of using that determination. There's your scabbard. That's what you're putting the sword in order to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So I hate to come, and I certainly hope that this wasn't the case. I hope I didn't come across. I'm not an angry individual. I'm really
not. No, you're
not. I tend to be pretty laid back. But it's there. It's an issue that I'm trying to deal with. But instead, what I'm doing is I'm trying to deal with it the right way, by using that focus to give me more fuel to hopefully make me a better person. And so that's why, I don't believe that I have those anger issues, but it's a way for me to try to turn something negative into something positive.
And one thing I can suggest is, I've learned this through my experience, and other people have reinforced this belief, that oftentimes the significant people in our lives, those that don't come into our life accidentally, if you go where your passion is, like whatever you're passionate about, you're more likely to meet significant people there. Like my wife and I reconnected while I was filming my TV show at a comic book and horror convention. So she happened to be there, I interviewed her. And then it turned out that we've known each other several times from childhood on. Our roads had crossed, but we never noticed or noted one another. But she was in these places that I like to go because I like to go there, and she liked to go there. So, we don't like all the same things, but we like enough of the same things where we have a lot we can share and enjoy together.
And I think that's absolutely fantastic. I couldn't be happier for the fact that you found this tremendous love of your life.
And I think you can too. You're passionate about the gym. I'm sure there are other things you're passionate about as well. And I know that with a pandemic, time is, as you pointed out, has to be wisely spent. But you're a great person. I'm sure there are many great people who'd be overjoyed to know you.
I hope so. I'm just waiting for that opportunity, and so that way I can be the best possible version of myself when they do finally show up on my doorstep.
That will happen. And we're at the end of our conversation for today. Ryan, thank you for everything. You're incredibly awesome. And I'm working on posting your 1,000 rep challenge, and I enjoyed reading it. I'm enjoying rereading it as I'm working through it. And that's going to be my next challenge. So thank you for everything, and I wish you success in everything you do. And I can't wait to interview you about your first movie.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And hopefully I'll be bringing more information about that soon.
Awesome. And thanks to everybody who's joined us, whether you were tuned in as we were speaking or whether you're going to tune in later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. We have a Facebook group. If you'd like to join it, it's called Mythic Physique Thermal Wellness. Anyway, take care, everybody. With a few seconds we have left, we're going to play If You Can Dream. Or not. I can't find it. Golden Bough.